if things like that are what we ask for when things are bad, why don't we ask for things like that when things are good? Right? I learned this in the funeral industry. I learned as a kid, and there'll be a lesson here, I promise. As a kid, I watched families fighting, yelling, screaming, fighting over grandma's ring, who's going to get what furniture, who gets the pictures, who's going to pay for the funeral. And those families took longer, and a lot of times throughout my life, never actually healed. The families, and they tended to be poor families, people that didn't have anything, that came together, loved each other, worked hard to get through it. They healed much, much faster. So I always thought, why can't we do that when things are good? Why don't we got to wait on tragedy? What's the lesson there? Okay. The pain is inevitable. The suffering is optional. If you want to be a business leader, you've got to learn right now how to be a good person, how to pull people together, how to work on things together in a consensus fashion to actually achieve something. Okay. Whether it's disrupting an industry, saving more money, managing your son's flag football team, whatever it is, you've got to be that person.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra-premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard. I really, really had a good time on this episode. This one is honestly one of my favorites so far. Jim Wilkinson, the chairman and chief executive officer of Trail Runner International, joined us and really dropped wisdom, motivation, and just some great thoughts on life. But before I get into Jim's background, I'm going to read from his bio, which I generally do not like to do. But when you've got a bio this robust and experience this broad, it would do him a disservice not to address all the things that he's seen and the places that he's been. Jim and I met at Yale in the Global Executive Leadership Program. And he doesn't know this, but he was instrumental to my personal growth. He was so motivational, so resoundingly positive when I met him about me. At a time where I didn't know if I was in the right space, if I should be in banking, if I should think about fintech, I came back with just a fire, an urge to build and grow. And you might figure out why after listening to this podcast. He's seen a lot. He's been around. He's a crisis management guy. He's a communications guy. He's got so much that he is that when he tells you you can do something, you really believe it. This guy has seen it. So prior to founding Trail Runner International, Jim served as SVP, Head of International Corporate Affairs for Alibaba Group. Yes, that Alibaba Group, the world's largest online and mobile marketplace. At Alibaba Group, Jim played a key leadership role in the company's historic IPO in 2014. And for those of you who know about IPO's history, that was very profitable for those who got involved very early on. He also designed and led Alibaba's international communication strategy, and he built the company's international corporate communications and government relations teams. Prior to joining Alibaba Group, Jim served as Executive Vice President of Communications for PepsiCo. Yes, that PepsiCo, a global food and beverage leader with net revenues of more than $65 billion. Jim joined PepsiCo from Brunswick Group, where he served in San Francisco as Managing Partner for International Business and Financial Strategy, providing strategic counsel on global corporate mandates spanning international operations, corporate and financial communications, corporate reputation, investor relations, crisis management, and litigation. Jim also worked for Brunswick Group in Texas, where he established and built the firm's Dallas-Fort Worth office. Prior to the Brunswick Group, Jim served as, are you ready for it? The Chief of Staff to U.S. Secretary of the Treasury Henry M. Paulson, serving as Paulson's senior strategist and counselor, working on matters of financial policy and crisis management. That was during the height of the Great Recession. The man had a front row seat to what was going on, and we speak a little bit about what his thoughts are on the economy today. And I heed you all to take what Jim has to say and use it to your strategic benefit, because this man has got the wisdom and the experience and the vision to be able to tell you from a person who was there, who had a front row seat. Prior to his work with the Treasury, Jim served as senior advisor to U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and worked with Rice in the White House as Deputy National Security Advisor for Communications. From 2002 to 2003, Jim was Director of Strategic Communications for General Tommy R. Franks at the U.S. Central Command, and from 2000 to 2001, served in the White House as Deputy Assistant to the President and Deputy Director of Communications. Prior to working in the White House, Jim spent several years working in the U.S. Congress for House Majority Leader Dick Armey and the National Republican Congressional Committee. Jim served as an officer in the U.S. Navy Reserves and also taught international communications at Johns Hopkins University. Jim holds degrees from the University of Texas at Arlington, Johns Hopkins University, and is a graduate of the Yale Global Executive Leadership Program, along with myself. He is an endurance sport enthusiast, including 26 marathons, and enjoys trail running, hence the name, playing chess, skiing, snowboarding, and playing the acoustic guitar. The man is a stud. I don't know what else to say. So take a couple minutes, really get into this episode. Do yourself, don't listen to this at 1.5 times. Listen to this one at 1, because the man drops knowledge. Take it all in. I hope you enjoy it. Let's go. All right, my friend, it's been a long time. I haven't seen you since Yale. And when we started a podcast, you were one of the first people I had to have on. Your background is exceptional. Jim, welcome on. Tell me everything you can.
Oh, man, I can't believe they let us into Yale still, and much less let us out. But it's good to be with you. I'm excited. And what a time. 2021, come on, man. If you're listening to this podcast, you know, if you're like me and you, Chris, you've reevaluated your life. What a year.
It's been a wild and different time. I mean, both economically, I mean, with the not being able to go outside, it's been bizarre to say the least. And now finally getting out of what feels like a little bit of lockdown and traveling a bit, it feels so good.
It does feel good. You know, I mean, people listening to this podcast, if you're like Chris and I, you're type A, you don't like anybody controlling really anything. You like to be a control person. And so we like to all control our schedule, and we certainly don't like an invisible enemy we can't see controlling it. And so it's been really hard on people. But I the other day I went to an actual meeting in person, and I stayed in a hotel, and it was outstanding. It was great. Yeah. It was awesome.
I did the same thing, I got to tell you. And I was walking through a hotel. It was actually in Texas. And I thought to myself, man, this feels so free. Yeah. It feels like I'm back to normal for a little bit, you know?
Yeah, look, we're tribal people. We need to be around people, and yeah. we do. And, you know, in the military, if you study psychological warfare, which I have, going back to some time in the military, the way you break somebody is isolation. And that's really how you break people down. And so all of us have, been broken down. You know, I put on my COVID 15 pounds. I have lost my COVID 15 pounds. And, my two friends, Miller and Light, keep getting in the way in Mexican food, but I guess if you're listening to this podcast, we're all shedding blood in the same mud here. We're all fighting and just got to get through it.
Well, don't feel too bad about the 15. I think I gained 40, but man, the beer was good. Every night was at least one or two just to take the edge off of the day. I'm back on the treadmill and back working hard, but man, it was a good run of me trying every craft beer I could get my hands on.
Yeah, well, they deserve to be tried. I mean, it would be rude not to. So,
and as far as isolation goes, that's how my wife wins every fight. That don't talk to you, leave you alone treatment. Damn, it's good.
Works every time.
So I want to jump right in, man. There's such limited time with you, and I wanted to really explore and unpack kind of how you wound up here professionally. I mean, tell me how you got started, how you got in the White House, how the transition went. I mean, tell me all these awesome details.
Look, man, I grew up in a town called Tenaha, Texas, town of 1,005 people, like 1,004, I guess, since I'm not there. But, you know, grew up there. Town was majority Black, and just really learned about people. I grew up in the funeral business and my grandfather, and really learned about how people acted, you know, in good days, bad days. And then I wound up as an athlete in college and just got lucky and got an internship in D.C., filled out a student loan application, probably falsified it just to get money so I could eat in D.C. And I used that money for ramen and ravioli, and I can still tell you how much ramen costs, macaroni and cheese. And I wound up in D.C. I did get academic credit, so they left me alone with the student loan, but I paid it off, by the way. But I wound up just in D.C. working, and I read a book called The Killer Angels, which really changed my life, which is a book about a fiction book, historical fiction about Gettysburg. And I really fell into this love of history and reading, and so I really spent all of my 20s reading everything I could. I went to grad school at night. I was served as a military officer in the reserves. And I had this idea that as I looked around, I didn't think people were smarter than me. I thought the people that beat me worked harder. I'm a big sports fan. I looked at NFL players and others, and they just worked harder. If you're playing in the NFL today for any team, you just outworked other people. You weren't that much better. You just outworked. And the next two or three people behind you aren't that much worse. You just outworked them. So I just decided, you know, if I don't have brains, which I don't, I'm just going to outwork people. And then I wound up, you know, reading books and in the White House and doing a lot of different things. So crazy times. But the one lesson I would tell you, if you're listening, is there's a book called Range I read recently, which is about how generalists sort of rule the world. And what they discovered is that statistically, if you were to try to predict, whereas I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old, if I were to try to predict exactly that my 9-year-old or 7-year-old, what school they would go to, that a monkey throwing darts is actually statistically more accurate than that prediction. And any prediction we make typically doesn't come true, right? I doubt anyone listening to this podcast is doing exactly what they thought they were going to do when they were a kid, right? And so my point of that is you can't be a life and career architect. You can't do it. It's really about winning every day. And as, you know, important people have told me before, your 5-minute plan is more important than your 5-year plan. Should you know where you're headed? Of course. I never would have met you if I hadn't gone to Yale and did that executive leadership program. Well, if I hadn't Googled it and I hadn't met my friend Marwan, who actually went to the program in the UAE, I wouldn't have done it. So we could never have planned to meet and do business together. And so, you know, it's who you sit by on an airplane. It's how hard you work. It's are you working out earlier in the morning and others and meeting interesting people. I've started this program called 3Volt, where I work out with DeMarcus Ware. He's a former NFL player. And it's at 5 a.m. So at 5 a.m., I'm out there. And it turns out if you're out there at 5 a.m., the people with you are all badasses. And it's mostly women, and they're all business killers. And I'm meeting great clients and business contacts because we all kind of share this affinity. Most people aren't up at 4 a.m. getting ready to work out at 5 a.m. with a former, you know, world-class NFL defensive end. And so my point is that's what it takes if you're listening is you got to win every day. And that was a lesson I learned early on.
You know, it's crazy to think how kismet it is. You know, life has a weird way of working out. What did you want to be when you grew up when you were a kid?
Funeral director.
Really? I thought you grew up
around the funeral home. We had a funeral. I wanted to do that. And as I got older, it got in the way of dating. So I decided that really wasn't as cool as I thought it was. So, you know, it was just why I wasn't cool. But yeah, I wanted to do that. And I wanted to explore. I think if you're listening to this and you're thinking about your philosophy, one of the things I can't stand is self-help books because, you know, I think they try to quantify common sense. And so you have to have your own philosophy. Everybody listening to your podcast has to have their own philosophy and your own way of doing things, right? And your own view. And my view has always been that I wanted to go explore and see the world, right? I just wanted to see it. And I want, you know, some things like you get to the Eiffel Tower, it's not as big as you think it is. You know, you go to AT&T Stadium and the Cowboys and it is as big as you think it is. And so,
yeah, it is. So,
you know, I can't wait to see SoFi Stadium. But my point is, you know, you want to go out and do that. And really, as young people, we invented the experience economy, guys like you and I, and now the young people today are living that. But that's important. So you got to have a philosophy when you wake up. I have kids, a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I'm trying to expose them to as many things as possible. So every time we just bought a piano a while back. I made my daughter sign a business contract with me because I knew I was going to buy this damn piano and it was going to sit there and not play it, right? And so I started making them sign business contracts. But the point is I need them to learn about markets and finance. If we've learned anything, I ran the Treasury Department during the crisis. And one of the things we've learned, whether it's the crisis then in finance, the crisis now in the pandemic, 9/11, you name it, that the spikes up and down are more a higher amplitude than we've ever seen in really history. Okay, that markets move and change faster than ever before. So you got to be a street fighter if you're going to make it in the economy. I say two things to people. Number one, in life, you're either a pilot or you're a passenger. And you got to decide what you're going to be. Okay, what I mean by that is most people listening to this podcast are pilots. Meaning they want to lead. They want to be the one. And that if you're listening to this podcast, you know that you don't get anything done unless you work with other people. Okay. So the first lesson is you're either a pilot or a passenger. Second lesson is you got to know who you are. I saw this thing years ago where that killer whale at SeaWorld bit that woman and killed her.
Yep, I remember
that. We had this big debate on CNN. What do you do with a killer whale? Do you release it? Do you cod lit, what do you do? And someone raised their hand and said, you know, it's called a killer whale. It's not called happy whale, cuddly whale. My point is, that's how it was built. Well, you have to know, if you're listening to this podcast, how you're built. What do you need, right? And that's what matters in life, is you got to wake up and be a street fighter. Chris, everyone in the world that works for me the first 2 years of my firm had to go to MMA training. Why?
No kidding.
Yeah, MMA training. And we're about to do it again with the firm. Because boxing actually to me is boring. Not particularly interesting. All right. An MMA fighter has to be good at jiu-jitsu, wrestling. They have to be smart. They have to know tai chi. They have to know boxing. They have to know strategy. You got to be good at like 7 or 8 different disciplines to be a good MMA fighter.
And you have to know your own body, your own capabilities.
That's exactly right. Well, if you're listening to this podcast, all right, it doesn't matter where you went to college. What matters is, are you good at multiple disciplines? You got to be international. You got to read books without pictures. You got to have something of your own. All these people tell me, I have 2,000 friends on Facebook. No, you don't. No, you don't. Okay, you don't have 2,000 friends. You maybe have 2 or 3 that would come get you if you're upside down in a ditch. Okay, and those 2,000 people would be liking the fact that you were rescued or liking the fact that you were dead. But wouldn't, those aren't your real friends. And so I actually challenge everyone listening here, sit down and write on a piece of paper, what are the disciplines I have to be good at? Okay. All right. And one of the things I realized was I wasn't that smart. So I said, okay, look, how do I beat my competition? Well, I get up at 4 a.m. because when I added up the hours, my month is 5 weeks. My competitor's month, he sleeps in, is 4 weeks. I get an extra week. Mm. Okay. So you got to get that. The economy is just too tough. It's too hard hitting to be good. And so I challenge everyone to really take a look at MMA, because MMA, I think, is the purest sport, because it most closely resembles modern business, I would argue.
And there can be wild swings. You can have a guy who's favored to win big time who goes down on the floor for making one split-second mistake.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford wound up in L.A., and Jared Goff was traded. I read in the paper today, because the coach ran into Stafford at Cabo. He's happened to run into him, and they talked about it and hit it off, and he became the new quarterback.
So, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is what's on the internet. It's got to be true, right? I read it in the paper today.
It's got to be true.
But my point is, if you're listening to this podcast, the good things that happened in your life, you didn't plan for, okay? But you got to put yourself in settings to where you get noticed and where you've got a chance to lead, okay? Everybody listening to this podcast right now is the kind of person, if it's 4th and 1, they say, give me the ball, okay? Give me the ball. And, all right, but you got to get in more settings where you can get the ball.
Well, give me some of that wisdom, man. You it's funny. You say that, you know, you're not the smartest guy, but I mean, you ran the Treasury during the Great Recession. There's been a movie made about your character, you know, and you took place in it and you were there. And we have these wild swings now, and recessionary economies, as you know more than most, are typically 7 to 10 years from trough to trough, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And we're in this weird prolonged period. It feels unprecedented. I mean, how do you look at this? How do you feel about what's going on right now?
Look, first off, Hank Paulson ran Treasury. I was chief of staff. I ran the department, but he was really doing it. And there was this amazing team of people there who were so, so brilliant. Look, I think, you know, I went to public school, so I often try to break things down to its most simple terms. All right. If the laws of physics laws of what I call financial physics aren't working, there's a problem. Okay. So let me give you an example. I live in Westlake, Texas. All right. I bought a house and I moved here from California 3 years ago. Okay. In 3 years, the price of that house has doubled. Doubled.
Wow. It's crazy.
That's doubled because people are moving from the coasts and fleeing, you know, and coming to Texas. But I don't know another time in history where a house has doubled, you know, unless you happen to own a condo that's built next to the new Amazon, you know, so when I sit down and mark to market my personal books, I can't do that. Okay. If you own a house and it's going up in value and you say, okay, wow, my house has doubled, so I'm going to get a home equity loan against that. That's not smart. That's not smart. Okay. All right. It always runs out. The money always runs out. It's always leverage and debt. One of the best books I ever read was When Genius Failed, about the failure of long-term capital management, written by Roger Lowenstein. Roger Lowenstein then, a few years later, wrote The End of Wall Street, which was about the financial crisis I was involved in. It was the same damn people that did it again. Okay. And so it's always leverage and debt. And so I always notice I invest a lot in a lot of different companies. Think about it if you're listening to this. Has anyone ever come to you with a bad deal? Hey, Chris, I've got this PowerPoint. This deal is probably not going to happen. I think it's a real risky gamble. You're probably not going to get your money back. No, it's always, this is the greatest deal ever. You have to understand. Okay. And so what I say to people, when I look at the economy, to answer your question, if it violates the laws of financial physics, I start to get nervous. Okay. And I think right now you've seen the greatest migrational shift probably in 100 years where people have left the coast coming inward. I don't know if that's been baked in yet. I don't know how that fits in, but there are going to be winners and losers in the economy there. And so I just either buy something low and sell it high, you buy it high and sell it low. Or too many other ways to make money, really. And so I always have people, I tell people, I do it personally, mark your books to market every month. And then look at it and say to yourself, say, self, how much of that is assumptions? All right, we know Occam's razor, right? The great rule of mathematics that says given a scenario, the answer with the least amount of assumptions is almost always the right answer. Well, the least amount of assumptions is truly what your net worth is going to be. Okay. And so that's what, if you're listening to this, if you're young, don't assume that the economy is always going to go up, because about every 10 years it goes bang.
And it's funny because, you know, you'll see online in places, I see the younger generation really being swayed in a way. It reminds me almost of the 80s where they had the seminars, the get rich quick schemes, where people are really, you know, selling things that are sensational and new sounding. I think I heard Airbnb arbitrage the other day and a couple different versions of things that are, you know, quick ways to make money with no real ability to buy. It's just funny to see how people are selling these product courses, they appear to be older, you know, in their 30s, for example, compared to a 20-year-old, but they've really only lived in an economically prosperous time. They haven't seen recessionary economies. It's just fascinating to see the polarity.
Yeah, so there, I saw a picture of this once, which I actually think is true. If you think about a circle, right, it starts with good men, we'll call it good men and women, you know, good people. Good people create good times. Good times create problems. Problems create crises. Crises create strong and good people. And strong and good people create good times. So there's an old saying that history doesn't always repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. And so when you look at the pandemic, I'm actually helping on the National Coronavirus Commission I'm working on the planning group there. And we look at this, and it's a great book about the 1918 pandemic, right? It also happened in the 50s, happened again in the 70s. Like this tends to happen periodically, right? And so when you study the past and you say, well, gee, we're going to study this like CDC did as though it were influenza, and you see that it actually is completely different, then you're locked into the lessons of the past. And so our job is to have what I call intensive ambiguity. I learned that from Jerry Jones, who owns the Cowboys, right? Intensive ambiguity. If it were easy, we'd all be billionaires, okay? What we have to do is wake up every day and be intense and win the day, not knowing what the actual outcome is going to be, right? If you're watching, if you're listening to this podcast, I can guarantee you, especially if you're young, the job you have, I will guarantee you this, okay? The job you have in 10 years will be in an industry that probably doesn't exist today. When I started in politics, we didn't have email. There was no internet.
That's crazy.
Okay. We had fax machines. Okay. All right. And so that's changed. And so, you know, the mobile phone, for example, is one of the most inefficient devices ever made. Think about it. You have to carry it around. Okay. I don't know a serious adult that thinks in 10 years there's going to be mobile phones. It won't happen. Because why would you, the world's going to figure out, don't carry it around. Have AirPods. Have something that will, you know, as you get semiconductors to be smaller, that can actually do things. So you don't have to actually carry around a device and have something you could lose. And so disruption is going to happen. Okay. Those of us that grew up going to New York and riding in cabs, that was a part of your initiation to New York, right? Yep. You get in this cab, there was this medallion screwed to the hood. I don't know why we all thought that meant it was like the safest thing ever. Good housekeeping, silver rule, because some medallion, but in a almost overnight manner, Uber and Lyft completely destroyed the cab industry.
Yep.
All right. I was just in New York. Let me tell you, quicker to get an Uber than to get a cab. Okay. And the experience is different. So my point is disruption is going to come. And I would just say, if you're listening to this, Think about your personal life. What could disrupt you? Okay. All right. Don't outkick your coverage, as we say in football, right? Mm. Don't overextend yourself, because going back to the Old Testament of the Bible, it's always overextending yourself that gets you in trouble.
So you have a fascinating transition at one point that's always made me curious, where you went from this political landscape and dealing with really solving problems to another type of solving problems. You went to Pepsi after that, right?
Yep.
And you were the head of communications. You were in charge of a very, very large network. How polar was that role for you, or how similar was it from what you were doing before?
Look, business is actually easy compared to government. Government's hard, because remember, you don't really have a P&L in government. Okay? You're using other people's money to solve a problem. So your P&L in the government's information is trying to get things done. And remember, the government of the United States was set up on purpose by the founding fathers to be inefficient. Okay? We all get upset because of it's inefficient. That's exactly how it was set up by the founding fathers. I found business to be easy. Here's a mega trend that affects everyone listening to this podcast and you and me. It used to be that PR and government relations and legal and marketing and finance and private equity and venture capital, those were all separate silos. And you kind of picked one, right? I'm just going to do that. That's what you did. Okay. Now they've all crashed together. And I go back to the MMA reference. You've got to know a bit about government relations. Okay. You actually can't work on the issue of semiconductors today and not understand what's happening with fabs, fabless production, what's happening with China, TSMC, what's happening with the auto industry, and in terms of not being able to get cars because they can't get chips fast enough to get the cars. And you can't just say, if you're listening to this podcast, well, I don't want to learn about that. I just want to do this one thing. Okay, then you're going to be a passenger. You're going to have a niche job, and you're never actually going to run anything. And if you're listening to this podcast, you actually want to run something. Okay, I don't know people that come to me and say, what I want to be is part of junior management forever. I never want to move up. Okay, so you actually have to know a bit about the law. Okay, you have to know a bit about finance. You have to know a bit about communications and marketing. You have to know a bit about all those things. I'm not saying be a legal expert. Don't try to be something you're not. What I'm saying is you have to at least know, you don't have to be able to walk on water, but you have to know where the rocks are. Okay. And at least know something about them, or you're just never going to run an organization. Okay. You're not going to, and everyone listening to this podcast, we all want to make more money. We all want our kids to have a better life. We all want to run things and have more responsibility. Okay. And like enjoy life and, you know, smell the roses. I tell people on your deathbed, I doubt you're going to be saying, I only wish I had put more stuff on Instagram, you know? And so you're going to be talking about, you know, the experiences, you know, Chris, I'm on the national board and executive committee of Make-A-Wish Foundation. We have 62 chapters around the country. And so I've really studied what kids want and what families want in their darkest time. God forbid anyone listening here ever has a sick child. They're not asking for more tweets. They're not asking for more Facebook friends. What they're asking for is an experience. Can I go see and do this? Can I go meet this person? It's a human experience, okay? And so if things like that are what we ask for when things are bad, why don't we ask for things like that when things are good, right? I learned this in the funeral industry. I learned as a kid, and there'll be a lesson here, I promise. As a kid, I watched families fighting, yelling, screaming, fighting over grandma's ring, who's going to get what furniture, who gets the pictures, who's going to pay for the funeral. And those families took longer and a lot of times throughout my life never actually healed. The families, and they tended to be poor families, people that didn't have anything, that came together, loved each other, worked hard to get through it, they healed much, much faster. So I always thought, why can't we do that when things are good? Why don't we got to wait on tragedy? What's the lesson there? Okay. The pain is inevitable. The suffering is optional. If you want to be a business leader, you got to learn right now how to be a good person, how to pull people together, how to work on things together in a consensus fashion to actually achieve something. Okay. Whether it's disrupting an industry, saving more money, managing your son's football team, whatever it is, you've got to be that person.
So for you, I mean, when did it all come together? I know that so many people feel like, you know, 30 is the new 20 and 40 is the new 30. And it seems like society, we're slowing down a little bit. People are, you know, I've got siblings that are, you know, in their late 20s, and they feel to me like they're in their teens. And When did you feel like you started to put the pieces together to really understand life in business? Was there like an age group that you hit, or was there a period of time? Was it the transition to Alibaba? I mean, what really made you feel like, okay, I'm starting to get life collectively?
I don't think it ever actually comes together. Hmm. I think if you're listening to this podcast, I think you will spend your life wanting more. Okay. I don't know how many people climb Mount Everest and say, well, I'm done. They start Googling other mountains, right? And so I'm not sure we ever have this eureka moment where we say, okay, I've reached the mountaintop. I think that's how we're wired. Some people do. But I would say having children, because now you've got someone coming after you. You know, being married, having an amazing wife, amazing kids. You've got hopefully the last faces you're going to see when you die. And now you're responsible for them. So when I lived in D.C., I was single, worked at the White House, went and partied, had fun, you know, did things I'm not particularly proud of probably. But you can do that when you wake up on Saturday morning and you're hungover and it's just you, that's okay.
Totally. Okay?
You don't do that with kids, okay, because they're learning how to be by how you're going to be, okay? And they say in religion a lot of time, I don't have a lot of time for organized religion. I'm spiritual. I'm a Christian, but I believe in religion has done a lot to separate us all. But as a person of faith, we have the responsibility to live our life by example, because you may be the only Bible someone ever reads. It's just how you live your life, okay? And so once you have children, you realize they're not going to do anything you tell them to do. It's a problem. I figured out why grandparents and grandkids are so close. It's because they have a common enemy, all right? And the parents. And so that was one. I think second, you know, meeting a woman that's my true partner, I think that's actually hard to find. I tried online dating years ago. I tried everything, but to actually have someone that's going to stand next to you and fight through the good and bad, that's actually hard. And I found this amazing woman named Erin, and it's been, my life's incredible. But I think for me, I woke up one day and I realized that the secret of life to me is you got to live with yourself. And if you listen to this video, listen to this podcast, we've all done something we hope no one ever finds out about. Everybody has. Okay. Anybody that tells me they're perfect, they're not. They're lying. Okay. We've all done something that we hope no one ever finds out about. That's just human nature. Okay. We've all done things we're not proud of. But are we spending every day wanting to be better business leaders, better managers of money, better managers of our lives? As long as you can work hard, you're going to be okay. I read about something years ago, which really changed my life, this 1% principle. I don't know if you've heard of it, but if you take 365 days, 1 to the 365th power, which means doing the same thing 365 days in a row equals 1. It's the same thing, right? 1.01 equals like 37 point something. So if you do just 1% better every day, you have 37 times increase. But how about this one? 0.99. If you just do 1% less, it's actually worth 0.03. So whether I'm working out and I say, I'm really tired, can I do one more push-up or one more TRX or one more mile? Or whether I'm with my kids and last night I was home, I was tired, exhausted. Colin Powell had died. I was really upset. He was a dear friend of mine. And my son needed help with his homework. Okay. I didn't feel like it. I didn't have it. Okay. But I did it because I figured I got to be 1% better. That may be, that interaction with my son may be important. Okay. So we're going to have these moments. And if each of us can be just 1% better a day with something, it's amazing the good we can accomplish. Because I got news for you. If you've ever flown into New York, into LaGuardia, and you come in down the coast of Jersey and they turn you in, you see that massive graveyard below you. Yeah. I don't know a single name of a person in there. What I know is they all had hopes and dreams too. We're all going to end up in a place like that. And so if we're all going to end up in a place like that, then why don't we make each day better? You're going to make more money, certainly. You're going to have a better life. But we're all going to end up there. As they said in Game of Thrones, which I think most lessons in life can be learned from the TV show The Wire, the TV show The Sopranos, and the TV show Game of Thrones. As they said there, winter is coming. It's coming for all of us. So let's enjoy these todays.
Yeah, God, the news about Colin Powell yesterday hit me hard too. I don't really know why. I never met the man, but he was just such a likable figure. It was hard not to feel like, wow, that happened quickly.
Hey, United, you know, think about it. If you're listening to this, write down on a piece of paper people in politics today you believe in. I can't think of many. but you think of Colin Powell, you think of someone that it's hard if you're younger listening to this to understand. He was someone that everyone respected.
Okay? Yeah.
And I remember, you know, like I'm a conservative, or I'm not a Republican anymore because I'm frankly independent. I'm libertarian. I don't like either party, frankly. I at this point I call myself tripartisan. I'll try anything, but if it works. But I remember Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who's a liberal Democrat from New York. Okay. Didn't like his politics, but he was a serious adult person, thoughtful, you know, person who actually read books without pictures and had views. Right. And so even though I disagreed with him, it didn't mean he didn't have key, good points. So that was the thing with Colin Powell. And I think one of the things we have to, as business leaders, if you're listening to this, we have to decide who we respect. Okay. I tell people, you're going to be, all of us are going to be the three people we surround ourselves with. So if our three best friends are drunks, we're going to be drunks. If our three best friends smoke weed, we're going to smoke weed. If our three best friends read books, we're going to read books. Okay. But also the extrapolation of that is we're going to be who we follow. All right. We're going to be who we believe in. All right. That's what we're going to model. Okay. And so, that's truly a different thing that's changed in our generations.
Yeah. And it's weird how following people is so different. You know, I'll say this, I was talking to my wife about Colin Powell last night, and I was saying to her, she really didn't know a whole lot about him. And my wife was never really political growing up. I said the easiest way to characterize the man, besides being a stud, was he was just distinguished. It was a characteristic that we've lost so much in not only the politicians, but just really society. People aren't really looking for that level of visible self-respect that they once had. It's more about chasing the immediate, I guess, clout, maybe?
I think it's clout. Look, I think it's a lot of it's money. I think it's clout. I think a lot of it is just, you know, why do I – here's an example. One of the things that bothers me about social media – somebody sitting in their basement in their underwear puts their opinion out on something. Why do I care about that? Who are they? Why do I care? It's like everyone's telling me don't get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to medical school? I didn't know you were an immunologist. I thought you were an insurance agent. So I think that's right. Look, I tell you what we've lost in society, which I think if you're listening to this, let's go get back. Let's take it back. One of my dearest friends is LaDainian Tomlinson. He was a very famous running back. The San Diego Chargers. Okay. He's a dear friend. He's my neighbor. His daughter is in my daughter's class. And, you know, he and his wife are dear friends of our family. Okay. I don't know his politics. I don't care. Okay. But he has a daughter that's in my daughter's class, and he has a son that is also in the same school. And I said to him one day, I said, you know, LT, the discussion you have to have with your son if he's stopped by the police is different than the discussion I have to have with my son who's white. Okay. That's not a political statement, okay? And so my point is, why can't we just concede that there are some things that families see things differently? Why is that so hard, right? But we have to. It's either defund the police, we hate the police, or it's there's no problem at all with racism. You know, why can't we meet in the middle and actually talk about these things? Because I'll tell you, if you're listening to this, if you're going to run a company, right, or you want to be in business, you got to work with people that look and talk differently. You know, I'm a business guy. I'm a CEO, got employees all over the world. Why am I such an advocate of diversity? Because Chris, by the time a problem gets to you or me, it's a hard problem. Yep. You've got to have perspective of gay people, straight people, black people, white people, business people, young people. Oh, you got to have different perspectives because it's a hard problem. All right. And I don't know why that's so controversial. I don't get it.
I think people's egos get wrapped up in their perspectives. You know, it's weird. And to your point, when you're running a company, there are all sorts of backgrounds and people and types. And if a problem does creep up, to think that it would go through several layers of middle management to get to you, to get to the extent that it is without people just rationally solving it, it still shocks me a little bit to this day, because people who are in these roles are not dumb people.
They're not. But, you know, people say things they can't take back. I was giving a speech one time, and this guy raised his hand and said, Mr. Wilkinson, you were a Navy officer. Do you agree with me that women should not be allowed to serve on ships?
Wow.
And I said, no, I actually don't. I said, I disagree with you. I was in the military reserves, and my best commanding officer I ever had was a woman. And then I actually was with General Franks over in Iraq and Afghanistan and traveled the world with him. And I saw incredible female leadership. And I said, furthermore, we used to have this debate in this country about women in combat. Let me tell you, combat comes to you now with asymmetric threats. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. A lot of women die in combat because it comes to you. So like, I think we're past that. Women are incredibly strong leaders in the military. So I said, I'm sorry, I just disagree with you. He goes, yeah, but you know, you put men and women together on a ship and things are going to happen. And he kept on and on with these sexist comments. And finally, I said, look, I said, I'll take your premise. I'll say you're right. Let's say that aircraft carriers can be only women. Are you okay with that? And he said, well, no, of course not. I said, well, why? Wait a second. Surely you're not saying women are not as smart as men. My point is, he got himself down a box canyon by saying something stupid and asinine. Okay. What we have to do, if you're listening to this, is call bullshit when people say things like that. That's our job. Because, you know, I love it now. If you're listening to this, you'll laugh. People come up to me and go, are you vaccinated? I'm like, yeah. They said, which one did you get? I'm like, Moderna. They're like, oh, okay, good. What's the difference? How do you know the difference between Moderna and Pfizer? What are you, an immunologist? What are you doing, gene sequencing at your house while you're making beer in the basement? What do you know about that? So my point is, like, there's these things that happen. It's why the comedian Bill Burr has gotten me through COVID. I love that man. Yeah. I love that guy.
No, it's true. I have the same conversations at work all the time. My family and I, we've been vaccinated. I've already had the booster myself. And, you know, it's just one of those things we've done to protect ourselves. My wife's an RN. Like, she comes from a medical background, and she hears some of these stories, and she's like, what in the hell does that guy know about anything when it comes to vaccines? We've been taking flu vaccinations for years, for decades.
Yeah, some guy some guy in his underwear in his basement, you know, who's putting down the Doritos and the gaming console to tweet about vaccinations. Why do I care about that? I would just say that all opinion, every voice matters. I do believe that. But all opinions don't matter. Hmm. You know, like, I'm heavy into sports. Okay. I have this thing where I read the Dallas Morning News every Sunday. The Sunday sports page is incredible. And they had all the seven of them predict the still grow the Cowboys game. Then you look at it on Monday, nobody was right. nobody was right. And so, and a lot of it goes, I think, if you're listening to this, how we're going to approach life. Okay. And I watch quarterbacks on the sidelines. I'm fascinated with sports, and I watch quarterbacks on the sidelines. If you look at defensive players, okay, like DeMarcus Ware, who's one of the great defensive players, okay, or Trayvon Diggs, who's incredible right now, or anything, think your best defensive player, okay, they have a different role. They're there to disrupt, destroy, take your plan and break it, and not let you advance, okay. So before the game, they're amped up, they're jumping up and down, they're punching each other, they're ready to go. Okay. If you look at quarterbacks, they're not. And they're calm, they're keeping their heart rate low. One of the reasons I think Tom Brady has done so well is he keeps his heart rate low. Well, we know from life and business and anything, that anytime your heart rate goes up, you're going to make mistakes. Okay. So you got to stay calm. And so, you know, I remember when Chicago played Indianapolis in the Super Bowl, and the opening kickoff, Devin Hester ran it back.
Yep.
Who won that Super Bowl? Indianapolis.
Yep.
Okay. And I remember they flashed to Peyton Manning. He just put his helmet on, went out and won the Super Bowl. And so that's our job, as Colin Powell said it in his leadership lessons, get mad, but then move on. Okay. You know, I have found that people that carp about attack you or things like that, and all of us have been attacked, everyone listening here, they've never actually done anything themselves. I tell people, we do things today that others won't do, so we can do tomorrow things they can't do, you know. And you know, one of the reasons I'm working out so hard to lose my weight right now is I want to be able to snowboard. I love snowboarding. Okay. And I want to I'm better when I'm thin than not. I just love that. So it may seem like a little thing, but we want to do things tomorrow that others can't do. And that comes to reading, that comes to business preparation, that comes to saving money. I've never had anyone say to me, Chris, gosh, you know, I'm so upset I saved all this money. I can't believe I saved all this money. I had a lot of people in COVID say to me, thank God I saved money.
Of course. Of course. You know, and one of the things you said really resonated with me about, you know, kids changing your perspective. I mean, I had a son, I have a 2.5-year-old, you know, mm-hmm. and he's really changed the level of my perspective on life. And one of the things you mentioned earlier, I was thinking about kids and just their future. I don't know that I thought about whether they should go to college or not. And I know I want to be cognizant of your time and we're running up against our limits, but I definitely want to get your perspective on this. The older he's gotten, the more I think that when you're 18 years old, what the hell do you know about life? Like you need to go to college if for nothing else, just to figure out who you are. And there's kind of this movement online right now, people talking about how college is a waste of money and it's not the best avenue. And I didn't take the most traditional pedigree path to school for sure, but I can't imagine life for my son without that.
Yeah, look, I think if you're listening to this, this is something I really feel strongly and I'm passionate about, which is you got to have a strategy as a parent, okay? And here's the strategy my wife and I picked. So we have this thing. I learned it from Condoleezza Rice. When Condoleezza Rice was a little kid, her parents would drive 100 miles out of the way to tour Ohio State. They toured colleges like people toured Disneyland.
Wow.
So right now, I was at the Annapolis Sailboat Convention this past weekend. We went to Naval Academy and bought our kids shirts and hats. Every time I go on a trip, I go to the local college and buy a hat and shirt. Why? Because my strategy is, and they've got, you know, the summer we did MIT, we did Boston College, we did BU, we did Harvard. My wife was like, "Oh, our kids should go to Harvard." I'm like, "Yeah, no kidding, they should go to Harvard." but my point is, we're trying to raise our children with the belief that what matters most is knowledge. It doesn't matter if you go to Tarrant County Community College in Fort Worth, Texas, or if you go to Harvard. What matters is knowledge, because when you and I were young, and for those of you listening, what your parent, where they went to school and where they came from really was an arbiter. You could go to an elite school, and when it was over, you took the train down to New York, they stapled your job application to, you know, Winthrop, whoever, the fifth or sixth, who went to school with your granddaddy, and you got a job at Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. It didn't work that way anymore. It's a street fight, okay? It's a street fight. So first and foremost, go back to what I said about the book Range. Everyone should read this book, Range, Why Generalists Rule the World. If your whole strategy is to get your kid into an elite school, all right, we know from years of study, that's probably not going to happen. Hmm. Okay. Statistically, a monkey throwing darts is more accurate than any prediction you make. I look at these parents. My son is 7 years old. He's learning to sail right now. They came over and said, "Wow, he's good. He could probably be in the Olympic team." What are you talking about?
Wow.
My daughter at the age of 7 was playing hockey. And someone walked over and said, "We really like her to get in development of hockey because she could probably be on the Olympic team." I'm like, "She's 7 years old. Come on, dude. I think you're full of it." My point is, let's not be prediction architects. Let's just decide where we expose our kids to. And my wife said something very powerful. She said, "I want my kids to freak out at home when we're around as a support system than when they go off." Okay. And if you shelter your kids and only surround them with people that agree with you and don't ever let them see the rest of the world, when they go to college, they're going to freak out. My dad was in law enforcement. I never drank beer at all. Okay. So the first weekend I was at college, I got so drunk. I'm talking hammered. Okay. Because there it was. And I had never been exposed to it. So my point is, our strategy with our kids is teach them about knowledge. Knowledge matters more. Okay. Number one. Number two, we want our kids to see people that are different, that have different perspectives. Because they're going to run into those people in life, okay? All right? You're going to run into those people in life, people that look different than you, people that speak different languages than you. That's just the real world, okay? And so you've got to teach your kids a bit of reality. The other thing is we teach them is unconditional love. All that matters is that, okay? About once a month, Chris, I get my heart broken. I've been nice to someone, and I find out they've been trashing me. I've been good to someone, I found out they've said bad things about me to someone. Everybody on this video or everybody listening to this podcast has had that happen. Okay. But you know what? You can't change who you are and not be good to people. All right. Because someone says something bad. Because we're put on this planet. We're all going to end up in that graveyard in Brooklyn. No one's going to even know it. They're going to be flying in going, "I wonder who all those tombstones are." Okay. If the secret of life, which I think is you got to live with yourself, then every single day, we got to be nice. You know, you may be the only person when you step on an elevator and says hi to someone that said hi to that person all week. Okay. You may be the other, and I'll end with this story. The other day, I work out with some pretty athletic people. And the other day, this woman came and she was really, really overweight. And she had clothes on and there were tags. You could tell she just went and bought these new exercise clothes and she had decided to change. Okay. It's 5:15 in the morning. We're working out and it's killing her. I mean, this is a hard workout and it's killing her. Okay. It's killing her. And I'm watching her, and these are all superhuman athletes around her, several, like four or five professional athletes. And I'm watching this woman there, and she's really morbidly obese, and she's doing the best she can. And all those athletes came up after and fist bumped her and high fived her and told her she kicked ass and made her feel like she was a part of something. Right. The next day, I was like 2 days later, I came back, there she was again. All right. Same clothes. She literally only had those clothes, and we worked out. I was working out next to her, and I looked over and I said, well, where are you going to go shopping? She said, what? What are you talking about? I said, I don't even know you. I said, where are you going to go shopping? I said, you're going to need some new clothes. She started laughing. So I ran into her a little time later, and I think she's lost like 50 pounds. It's an incredible amount of weight this lady's lost.
Wow.
She said, I just want to thank you. She said, the first day I was there, all these people came up to me, and I would have thought they would have laughed at me. I would have thought they would have made judgments of me. But they fist bumped me, made me feel so welcome. So I actually felt welcome. I came back the second day, and your little comment about going shopping made me realize I was taking my life back together. Now, Chris, I'm not telling you that story to tell you how great a guy I am. What I'm saying is that was an offhand comment for me, right? Let's each of us realize that somewhere within a mile of you listening to this podcast, someone doesn't have food. There's a family of black people in a house, or Latinos in a house, or any race in a house that can't go to school, that has five kids, that has one laptop maybe, and those kids are falling behind. Okay? Let's realize that suicides are up. And when you're walking down the street and you smile at somebody, you may be the only person that smiled at them in a month, or said hi to them in a month, right? Let's do that, okay? And I trust it's going to pay off. Let's do that. How you play the game matters. And so I tell that story because as you think about your life, everybody listening to this podcast has reevaluated every part of their life during the COVID. If you tell me you haven't, you're lying. And I can tell you, if I wanted to be around 100 people, and I want to be around like 3. I've really limited the friends I want to be around. What I'm going to tell you is, at the end of the day, Facebook ain't going to solve it. Instagram ain't going to solve it. TikTok ain't going to solve it. YouTube ain't going to solve it. All right. What's going to solve it is real human actions, interactions with people, and shared sacrifice for each other. That's what's going to solve it. So all I ask, if you listen to this, try it. 10 times today, just say hi to somebody you never would have said hi to. You'd be amazed how good you'll feel.
Wow. Jim, I can't thank you enough for being on, man. That has been, and the irony here is we've only scratched the surface of what you've done, who you are, you know, where you are in life. And we spent so much talking about that wisdom. I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for being on. If someone wants to find out more about you, I'm sure they could Google it and find out the past, but is there anything that you want them to take a look at or point them to, or anywhere they can find out more about just, you know, who you are and all the things that you do?
Well, first of all, people, LinkedIn me. Send me a LinkedIn. I love getting to know people, because if you're listening to this, we're all in this together. I mean, you know, we're all shedding blood in the same way. We're all trying to figure it out. And so I've had things that have worked for me. I'd love to hear what's worked for you if you're listening to this, because I learned something from everyone. And we all have someone we call and ask for help. I would just ask everyone, write on a piece of paper today. At the top, write win the day. And just write down an audit of your time for the last few days and look at when you got up, when you went to bed, what you did in between. And just look and say, can I do better? Is there something more I can do? Okay. I know I can. I'm a Christian. My wife and I donate a lot of money. We work hard in our church. Let me tell you, we're not doing enough. Okay. Nobody's doing enough. Okay. We can all do more. And you know, I sometimes look at you know, what people's cell phone bills are and then how much they donate. And so figure out what you're going to support and who you're going to be with, and go and do that. But just really do that. Don't worry about me and what I've learned. Like, let me learn what you've learned so I can learn from you. But focus on you, and it's going to be cool.
Awesome, brother. I can't wait to be out there again. I think I'll be out there in a couple of weeks. Let's catch up. Let's grab a beer.
Come see the Cowboys game. They're winning.
All right, my friend.
Take care, man.
You too. Take care. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you are listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. We're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.